glorify God, we lift Him up, but also we see and keep preaching to each other what God has done for us. That God has done these things. We're in 1 Samuel. Chapter 30. Almost finished. Is the cup half empty or is the cup half full? I like to think it's full, half full. If you start worrying about being half empty, you start worrying. But while we're almost finished, we've learned some good things. And there's a lot more good things to be learned. I like these teaching type things, not that I know anything, but God knows things and He teaches us things and He shows us in all these things. If y'all been paying attention, He ain't been tricked, fooled, or surprised by none of these things that's been going on. And in all the things that's been going on, He's been in the works of it, making sure that His plan keeps going on. Every time we look around, even with Abraham and all those folks, Abraham nearly blew it two or three times, but God intervened. He withheld Ahimelech where he couldn't do anything. He took care of different things so that the bloodline of Jesus Christ was never affected by man's mess-ups. Only God could do that. Only God could go through 1,600 years and write all these books and everything and have them all work out to where He didn't mess up a single thing. I know people like to say, there's contradictions. Like they like to take these spear stories. Look, he took this spear. One time he falls on a spear, the next time he falls on his sword. This, that, and that. See, there's a contradiction. No, it's just a different Greek word that was used at the time that they translated it out. There's no contradiction. What difference does it make if he fell on a sword or a spear? He fell on it. He committed suicide on it, and he asked his sword bearer there behind him, armor bearer, would you please finish killing me so these guys don't get to do it? So, I find no contradiction. I find when there is a contradiction, it's usually a man thing where he's trying to prove a man point. Anyways, I like David. And I like the things that God says about David. And while God did anoint him to be king, and God did find a man who was after his own heart, he also found a man who was able to sin, a man who was not necessarily perfect, a man who made mistakes. And in these things, he still showed in his power he could bring all these things. In fact, it says that one day Christ is going to sit on David's throne. I'm sitting there, how do you do all those things? But he's got it all worked out. And it came to pass, that means a little while later, they're on their way back. You remember now, they're coming back from trying to be with Achish. He went there because he couldn't go any other way and save face. He had to go with Achish. And the other Philistine lord said, oh, no, you're not. And so they're on their way back to the Ziklag. They're on their way back to where their wives are and their children are and all their stuff is. And it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day. In other words, they were a pretty good piece off, maybe 80 miles or so. On the third day, that them Amalekites just ain't going away. Them Amalekites seem to still be hanging around. The Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag and smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire. So we see here these old Amalekites, they say, well, David's off with the Philistines. Saul's off fighting the Philistines. The country is free pickings. We're just going to make us a little run down there. We're going to burn some places up and steal some sheep and steal some folks and do what we do best, go against God and His people. And so they headed on down there and they burnt Ziklag with fire. Now, and had taken the women captive that were therein, they slew not any. Now, you got to say God's in this pretty good for them not to slew somebody or kill somebody or be angry with somebody. They went in there, they burned this whole place down. They brought all the women and the children out, and they loaded them up, and they took off. They didn't slew or kill one person. either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way, and they didn't even seem that they even ravished anything. You got to say, God's definitely in this, because they're sitting here, all these women, all these children, all these young folks, and yet the only purpose they had in their mind was, we're going to take them captive so we can go sell them somewhere and make us some money. God definitely was on top of that, because we know the thoughts of men. So he spared that. And so it says none of those people were hurt. They were all carried away captive. They were all taken. So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire. Now, they're coming down off the hill or wherever they're coming down, and all they see is all the houses burnt and everything tore down. My first thought is, my wife is dead. My wives are dead. He's got two wives. The other men behind him, we've been all following you, David, because Achish told you to go play with these Philistines. We would have been here to defend our family, David. Now our kids and our children and all are dead. Everything's burned up. That's the first thought coming over the hill that they're thinking. They're all dead. Everything's burned up. Everything's messed up. And David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burnt with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captive. Now, I don't know. I'm guessing they figured that out because there ain't no dead bodies. I mean, if there's no bodies, undoubtedly they've been taken someplace. So whether they were taken over a hill or whatever, they were taken someplace. So there are no dead bodies, and they're sitting here. Wow. First of all, our thought was, we've lost them. Now our thought is, where are they? What are we going to do about this? What's going on? How are we going to fix this? Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voices and they wept. That's a good reason to cry when you can't find your wives and your children and stuff like that, and all your stuff's been taken or burned. And they lifted up their voices and they wept that they had no more power to weep. These folks wept so long that there was no more tears to cry. There was no more frustration to get out. They wept until there was all wept out. And David's two wives were taken, Ahinoam the Jezreelite and Abigail the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And David was greatly distressed. He was distressed for his family. Naturally, he's distressed because his stuff's been taken. And he was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him. Look, David, if we'd have been here instead of there, if we'd been taking care of our business instead of following you off with Achish to the Philistines, these Amalekites wouldn't have got away with this stuff. That's just presumptuous thinking, because God's in the sovereignty of this thing. But they're sitting here, if we'd have been here, this wouldn't have happened. We'd have took care of this issue. And they said, we're so upset with you, David, we're even thinking about maybe stoning you. These are the guys that followed him into battle every day. These are the ones that he's led all over the countryside, took care of, fed all the discouraged people, all the ones who were messed up. And I would like to think that these were the people of Belial, the ones who were not necessarily, and we'll see some of these in the later end when they want to divide up the stuff, but these were the men maybe who instigated this. David has let us all down, guys, and maybe we ought to stone him and get us a new king or a new ruler or a new leader. And he was very distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the souls of all the people was grieved, every man for his son and for his daughter. Every man was worried about where his family members were. Men get crazy when they think something's happened to their families. They want to get revenge. They're not thinking about doing things right. They're not thinking about doing things upright. They're saying, you have messed with my wife, you've messed with my kid, you've messed with my son, you messed with my daughter. They're thinking revenge and whatever it takes. But it says here, but David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. And I've often thought about that, that he was sitting there praying and worshiping and doing all this stuff, and because these guys are thinking about stoning him, and he's not even worried a thought about them stoning him. He's taking his love and praise and worship. But that's not the case. Did you remember, did he ask when he went to Achish, Did he go get the Lord and say, Lord, you reckon I ought to go off with Achish? You ever see him saying, you reckon I ought to go off to Gath? All of a sudden, through all these things, God's got his attention. He says, maybe it's time I get back to the real reason I'm here. Maybe I need to encourage myself in the Lord and find out what God has to say about what I need to do, where I need to go. These men that are following me, they're at their wits end. They're ready to stone me. I took them off to play with Achish. I took them off over to Gath. Maybe I would encourage myself in the Lord and find out what God has to say about where would you have me to go, Lord? Would you have me to chase these people, or would you have me not to chase these people? He encouraged himself in the Lord, and it says, and his God. We make sure we understood exactly who he was getting encouragement from. And David said to Abiathar, the priest, remember the guy that was the son of the guy at Nom who got killed, Ahimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. Now, he didn't say bring me the ephod so he could put it on. He said, bring me the ephod so you as the priest can go before God and ask God for direction and ask God for places we ought to do and what we should do. Get God's thoughts on the things that's going on. He said, bring me hither the ephod. And Abiathar brought thither the ephod to David. And David inquired at the Lord, saying, and he's talking to Abiathar, because Abiathar is the intercessor at that time, shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? Two questions. We know God answers one question at a time. And he answered, saying him, pursue. He didn't even get elaborate with it. He says, pursue. Just chase them. Pursue. For thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. Now, we remember that David was anointed. God told David already in a roundabout way, I'm going to take care of you and yours. David has that little bit of encouragement, but God says, you pursue, and guess what? You're going to recover all. Now, if we were writing this past history, we could say, and David went and whooped them all, and not a one got lost. But God is saying, and you will recover all prehistory, pre-time, before he leaves. He didn't just load up his guys and say, look, guys, we're going to go, and if we don't lose anybody, we're going to write this book and say, we didn't lose one. No, God says, you go and pursue, and oh, by the way, you're going to recover all, everything. Now, we know that those people were drinking and eating. We ain't worried too much about the food. We're not going to get that technical. But then again, they might have been eating and drinking the stuff they stole from somebody else and not from David. So we're going to get to that in a minute. But anyways, God says, you're going to recover all. And to me, when he says all, that means all. I'll find my place. Okay, so David went. He and his 600 men that were with him and came to the brook Bezer, where those that were left behind stayed. So we get to this brook, and it's not that the brook is too deep to swim across or too big or whatever, but 200 of these guys have been wept out, cried out, been traveling for 3 or 4, 5, 6 days back and forth, wore out. They have no spirit in them to go anymore, and or maybe David said, you guys stay here by the stuff. You're not quite up to snuff right now. You're not quite ready in fighting ability, but I need somebody to stay by the stuff. It could be not that they were just so faint they couldn't go, but David might have actually commanded them to stay there so that when the other guys left all the stuff, they could run faster, move faster, ride faster. So it says, at the brook Bezer, and they were left behind and stayed, and David pursued, he and 400 men. So by that, we know that 200 men stayed behind. These 200 men were to make sure that the enemy might not have snuck back around behind them. Hello? That could have been a possibility. Or that if something overran David when they came back across, they would be the last ones there to fight, to take care of things. But they stayed there to guard the stuff. What's left of their armaments, what's left of their food supply, what's left of everything they have. And 400 men and 200 abode behind, which were so faint that they could no longer go over to Brook Bezer. And they found an Egyptian in the field. Now, they're riding down the road. They're looking for tracks. They're looking for signs of which way these folks went. And there it is, right out there in the middle of this field, in the middle of nowhere, this Egyptian guy laying around, half starved to death, half dead, pretty more dead than alive. And they see this Egyptian out there in the field and brought him to David and gave him bread, and he did eat. And they made him drink water, and they gave him a piece of cake of figs. So I tell you, fig cake's pretty good for you. And two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit came again to him. In other words, this stuff was so good and so tasty and all that he perked up. He got to feeling better. Whatever ailment he had, a little bit of food, a little bit of water, a little bit of encouragement, perked him up. It says, and he drank the water, and they gave him a piece of fig cake and a cluster of raisins. And when he had eaten this, the spirit came into him, for he had eaten no bread nor drank any water 3 days and three nights. That's a pretty good time to go without food and water. Plus, we don't know, being that he was sick, we don't know how long before his boss man or his owner or his master says, "You're dragging us down. You just get over there and lay by that tree, and if you die, you die, and if you live, more or less." So he's been out without food or water at least 3 days and three nights. And David said unto him, as soon as he revived and got a little strength back in him, "To whom belongest thou?" In other words, if you're an Amalekite, you're toast. He looked like an Egyptian. He seemed to be an Egyptian, but when he opened his mouth and could talk, he would have gave himself away. If he said, "I'm an Amalekite, and by the way, I just killed a bunch of stuff and burned it all up," that'd been the end of him. But he says, "Who art thou, and whence art thou?" And he said, "I am a young man of Egypt." He made sure they didn't think he was an Amalekite. "I'm a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite." In other words, I know you hate the Amalekites, and guess what? They treated me bad. I'm a servant to one. I only did what I did because if I didn't, he'd have killed me. I had to do what my master said to. "Look, David, I know we just burnt down Ziglag. I know I was there. I know I was part of it, but I only did it because my master made me. This wasn't my idea." He says, "I'm a servant to an Amalekite, and my master left me. He was mean and ugly and cruel to me. I got sick." You reckon they didn't have wagons and horses with little carts and horses that pull their armament and stuff? They said, "Look, dude, just get up in the wagon for a couple of days. It'll be all right." That'd have been a good master, right? "You ride in the wagon. I'll get you some food and water. When you get to feeling better, we'll get you back out." But instead he says, "You get over yonder. I don't want to see you. If you die, you die. If you live, you live. You're hindering us." That's the kind of master he had. "And my master left me because 3 days ago I fell sick." That master believed in don't being around no sick people. "If you got a cold or something, you get away from me. I don't want to catch it." Maybe that's some of them people that use too much lotion. I don't know. But his master definitely didn't want him around because he was sick. And we made an invasion. He's telling what he did now. "We made an invasion upon the south to the Cherethites and unto the coast which belongeth to Judah and unto the south of Caleb." So we know he was right there in the land of Judah and around about in that area. "And we burned Ziglag with fire." He said right out, not right off, "We burned Ziglag with fire." Now he says we went off with these Cherethites. We went to the south of the Cherethites. So he says, you know when David told Achish, "Here's where I'm going to make a road. Here's where I'm going, and I went against Judah, and I went against these people," and Achish believed him. Well, the Amalekites actually went and did what David pretended he had done. They went right to the south of Judah, and they went right into the Cherethites, and they went right into the coast of Judah, right up to where Caleb's family was. So these Amalekites did exactly what David had told Achish he had been doing. So David was going against Achish's enemies and Judah's enemies. The Amalekites went against Judah themselves. So you be careful what kind of lies you tell, because it might come back on you. It says, "And we burned Ziklag with fire." In other words, he didn't say, "I wasn't there." He didn't say, "I was up on the hill sick," or whatever. He says, "I was there with them. We burned Ziklag with fire." And David said unto him, "Canst thou bring me down to this company? Can you take me to where they're at? You know where they're going to, where they're headed towards." Now, naturally, they probably talk about, "We're going to be traveling up to here, and we're going to camp out over here by the lake, and we're going to get ready to turn and go this way." They're making a plan on all the places they're going to go do their thing. So David's sitting here. If you've been with his people a long time, you kind of got an idea or some kind of concept where they're going to be hanging out or where they're going. He says to him, "Canst thou bring me down to this company? Can you tell me where they're at? Can you show me?" And he said, "Swear unto me by God." Now, we don't know if this Egyptian actually was a worshiper of Jehovah or not, but undoubtedly he'd been around long enough to understand that if you actually swore by God, the living God, the high God, your oath had to be pretty serious, and most people, if they swore by it, wouldn't go back on it. So he's sitting here, "If I tell you where it's at, you just still might kill me, so I need a little oath thing here. I'm going to ask you to swear by God that thou wilt neither kill me." I don't want you to kill me, but worse than that, don't give me back to my master. That's been terrible, especially if he finds out I told you where to come get you. Say, "Don't kill me, nor deliver me to the hands of my master, and I will bring thee down to this company." In other words, if you'll swear to me, I'll show you where they're at. I'll take you to where the last place I heard they ought to be. I'll bring you to them. And he brought them down. Behold, they were spread abroad upon the earth, eating and drinking and dancing. And some people would say, there you go, you can't eat, drink, and dance. Because all the great spoil that they had taken out of the land of the Philistines, those Cherethites, that was the one name of the tribe of the Philistines, and out of the land of Judah. So not only did they pick on the Philistines to steal some stuff, but they also stole stuff from Judah. And so it's a great possibility that this wine and this drinking that they were doing was all Philistine wine and drinking. It could have been, I don't know, because David says he ain't going to lose a thing. But we know they're eating and drinking and partying down. And they were spread out all over the land, so they were in no uniform stance. Like, you remember when Saul's people were laid out in their rows and in their armaments and in their things? Every general and all their men were all lined out in a certain kind of way. These guys were just spread out all over the place. And this group over here was drinking and eating, and this group over here was partying and dancing, and this group over there was doing something else. They were all just pretty well doing their own thing. And he brought him down, and they were spread abroad upon all the earth, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil that they had taken out of the land. In other words, they had taken enough stuff that they could party down. They were happy fellers. They, especially when you could go whip a place and take all the women and children, you ain't got to even throw an arrow at nobody. He said, man, they were partying down. Party's about to be over. David doesn't even warm up here. It says, and David smote them from the twilight evening until the evening of the next day. Now, if I'm understanding, there's two twilights. There's one twilight in the morning when the sun's doing its thing, and there's twilight in the evening when the sun's doing its thing. But he says, from the twilight evening, which would tell me in the evening, and all the way through that night, all the way through that day till the twilight The next day, David was whooping Amalekites. And he wasn't just wounding them, he was killing Amalekites. It says here, he was after them for a whole day and a night, or a whole night and a day, into the evening. And there escaped not a man of them, save 400 young men, which rode upon camels and fled. Now, there were some special fighting camels back then that were like racehorses. Dromedary camels were extremely fast, extremely swift, could go a long distance without water. And it seems that maybe there was a stack of them off to one side somewhere, and when they saw David and his ruckus get started, they knew the best thing to do was get on them camels and take off. And of course, David didn't have anything to chase those guys with. Those 400 guys got away. Now, I don't know how many of them there was of these other guys, but out of all the people that were there, and notice, none of the innocent captives got killed or hurt or anything during this battle. So whoever how David done it, he undoubtedly went between the captives and the armies and cut them off, because the first thing most bad guys want to do is, if I can't keep them, I'll kill them. So somehow David got between the captives and the army, and he whooped on them all night, all day, and only 400 of these guys with these fast camels got away. And they fled. And it says, and David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away. And David rescued his wives. All the Amalekites suffered. All the Amalekites, except those 400, ended up dead, because it says he slew all of them. This is one time it didn't say exactly how many there was, but I only know 400 got away. If you got 400 getting away, there got to be a lot of them that didn't make it. He says, and he smote them from the twilight, even until the evening of the next day, and there escaped not a man of them, save 400, which rode on camels and fled, and David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his wives. Boy, he was a happy feller. And I'm guessing because David rescued his wives, the other men's wives were okay. They were getting to be pretty happy fellers too. And there was nothing lacking to them of their stuff that was at Ziklag, of their wives, of their children, of their families. Not only did they recover their families, but they recovered stuff that belonged to the Caleb's bunch and to all these other bunches and all these other families that had been in the south of Judah. There was nothing lacking of them, neither small nor great, neither son nor daughters, neither spoil nor anything that they had taken to them. David recovered all. Now, David's promise was not that he would get everything from everybody else, but he would get everything that was pertaining to him and his men. And David recovered all. He didn't lose one person. Now, you've got to say God was all over that, because God's in charge of where arrows fly and where they don't fly. If you don't believe that, ask Ahaz or Ahab, whichever one it was. But by peradventure, some guy just shoots an arrow up into the sky and it comes down in the harnesses of a king. Can you imagine that? Anyways, that's another story. We'll get to that in another year or two. It says, and David took all the flocks and the herds which they drave before those other cattle, and said, this is David's spoil. Now, that doesn't necessarily that David kept it, but the thing is, everything that didn't belong to everybody else, all the herds, all the cattle, everything else, David took that under his wing, under his protection, that when he got back to where everybody else was, he could divide it up and give it to the rightful owners of everything. All the men got what was their personal stuff, and we're going to get to the book here in a few minutes where we have a little confrontation over that personal stuff, because men are men sometimes. But it says, he took all the flocks and all the herds which they drave before the other cattle, and said, "This is David's spoil." Now, we understand that the oxens walk at a certain pace, and cows work at a certain pace, and camels walk at a certain pace, sheep walk. So you take your stronger, broodier animals maybe and put them ahead of the weaker animals. But either way, these animals walked in sections and herds, and David kept them all under control to bring back to their owners and to the people under his care. And David came to the 200 men, which were so faint that they could not follow. David, whom they had made also to abide, David, whom they had made also to abide at the brook Bezer, and that's why I say he possibly commanded them to stay here. Maybe because they weren't strong enough, but also under his command, "I want you guys to stay here." So therefore, they didn't just stay there because they were too weak. They were willing to go. They wanted to go, but physically were maybe unable to go. So they were willing. Sometimes we're willing, but we don't make it to the battle. It says they were willing. And they went forth to meet David and to meet the people and were with him. And when David came near to the people, he saluted them. In other words, he wasn't mad at them because they were there. He was glad to see them. He was glad they were feeling better. He was glad they were stronger. He was glad they were able to get up. So undoubtedly, maybe he did command them, "You stay here till you're ready or till you're able, but you make sure you guard the stuff. You have a duty, even though you're here, even though you're weak, you keep the stuff." And when they went out to meet him, and he saluted them and checked out what they were feeling like and how they were doing and lifted them up, then said all the wicked men. We remember that everybody that was with David wasn't necessarily a good old boy. He had all the discontents, all the malcontents, and everybody else that was brokenhearted and downtrodden and everything else didn't like Saul. So he may have had some guys that followed him and followed Saul, but he also had some guys who were just outlaws out there just to do some stuff. Then answered all the wicked men. "Now, guess what, David? I just went and fought them Amalekites for you." Now, I understand these guys stayed back here, but they didn't hazard their life. They stayed by the brook. They didn't do no fighting. "I just went and fought a whole night and a whole day for you, David, and they ain't getting this stuff." That's what wicked men think like. Yeah, they're not on the same army with us. We went out and we did that sword fighting stuff. They laid up here and got feeling better. That's the way men think, right? "And answered the wicked men, the men of Belial, of those that went with David, and said, because they went not with us." These guys didn't go out and fight. These guys didn't go out and risk anything. These guys didn't shed no blood. "We will not give them aught." They didn't ask. They said, "We won't. We will not give them aught of the spoil that we have recovered, save to every man his wife." We don't want their wives and his children, that they may lead them away and depart. In other words, we don't even want to hang around with these guys no more. They can have their wives, they can have their children. These 200 guys can go party somewhere else. We don't want to even fight beside them no more because they weren't even willing to go with us. We hazarded all this stuff and they just stayed by the stuff. Well, you know, in every army, there's somebody's got to stay back and cook, and there's somebody's got to stay back and be a doctor, and there's somebody's got to stay back and take care of armament. There's always a bunch of soldiers that are back behind the lines, making sure the guys who are in the front lines can do what they got to do. David understood that. Abraham understood that. All these kings back in the old days understood that. And so when they would bring in the spoil, every man would bring in a pile of spoil, and then they would lay it all down, and then the leaders would take that spoil and divide it between everybody. It says, the wicked men says, "Oh no, those men went not with us, David. Because they went not with us, we will not give them aught of the spoil that we have recovered, save every man his wife and his children, that they may lead them away and depart." In other words, when this day is over with, we don't want to see them guys no more. They were pretty, they were acting like they were king. They acted like we in charge of this thing. We just whipped all these guys. We in charge. And David here says, now David's got to be bold here because a while ago they were wanting to stone him. A while ago they were wanting to take him out. David says, ye shall not do so, my brethren. He calls them brethren. He brings it down to softness, but yet he's firm and says, you will not do so, my brethren, with that which the Lord hath given us. They're sitting here saying, we went and whipped these people. We went and done this stuff. We went and got this stuff. And David said, you won't do this with what the Lord has given you. You didn't win this battle just because you're bad. You didn't win this battle just because you're strong. You went this, won this battle because God says, go and you shall recover all. Man, you got to get to it. You got to get to it. He says, and David says, you don't do this with the things that the Lord has given us, who hath preserved us. He hath preserved us. Wait a minute, you're talking about all these things you just did. If God had not preserved you, you could be laying back in that field with them Amalekites. He didn't have to make everybody be a winner. He didn't have to bring back all 400. He just needed enough men to make sure he killed all the Amalekites. As the Amalekites were being killed, he didn't need as many. But yet God says, you're not going to lose one. Even the men of Belial, even the men who were wicked, were covered under God's protective covering. He says, you have been preserved. He hath preserved us and delivered the company that came against us into our hand. We went down in there. We were outnumbered. We were out-armored. We were out-everything. And we didn't lose one single man. And you're going to come back here and say you're not going to let these people have their stuff. God has preserved you, kept you alive. God has made you where you can have your wife. He has made you where you have your sons. You can have your daughters. And now you're going to tell these folks, you can have your wives and your children and then get out of here. What kind of compassion is that for their fellow soldiers? David says, no, that's not the way we're going to do this. Now you got to figure David's standing up against a couple hundred guys maybe. We don't know how many of those 400 were the wicked men, but you know, David, he wasn't there just by himself. He might have had a couple there. That's right. David's right. And then again, he might not have, because just a while ago, every man was going to stone him. For who will hearken unto you in this matter? In other words, if you brought this up to a courthouse, and you had you a judge listen to everything that went on, knowing how Abraham was treated when he went to the war with the spoil, and how other soldiers have went to the war with spoil, and now you're going to come here and say, now we don't even want these guys around, we don't even want them to have the stuff, they can have their wives and their kids, but we're not giving them no blankets, nor sheets, nor cooking stuff, they got to go. Now you reckon that judge, when he hears how you're treating them, who stood by your stuff and protected it with their lives, and now you don't want to share, how that judge is going to think about you. It says, and who will hearken unto you in this matter? But as his part is to go down to the battle, so shall the part be that tarrieth by the stuff, they shall part alike. In other words, every soldier under the command has a part in this battle, even if they're not on the front line. Every cook, every housekeeper, every horse trainer, every person in the army has a part, and nobody's going to lose their part because of what part they play. Every man gets a part of the spoil, whatever it may be. And it was so from that day forward. Now we understand that while it says it was so from that day forward, it was also so back in Abraham's time. It was also so during other soldiers' times. Even in Numbers, it talks about them going and fighting some people, and everybody brought all the spoil, and all the people shared in it. So it wasn't something that just automatically started happening with David, but it was a standard throughout most of the times in the battles. But it was an ordinance from that day forward. He made it a statute and an ordinance. In other words, now he made it a legal thing. Before, it was just a natural thing. This is what we do anyways. And David said, I'm going to make it a legal thing. Everybody shares in the spoils. And when David came to Ziklag, he sent the spoil unto the elders of Judah, that part that was given to him as the cattle and stuff that were not from Ziklag, even to his friends, saying, behold, a present for you of the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. In other words, you've been, all the people in south of Judah and Caleb and all those folks, and this is all them that we're going to be talking about here. We're trying, we may not be able to give you all your stuff back, but we're giving you back what was taken from you, and maybe even some of the stuff that was taken from the Philistines, because he sure ain't going to give it back to the Philistines. So we're going to give you a present or a thing for what you did to them which were in Bethel, and to them which were in the south of Ramoth, and to them which were in Jeter, and all these cities were in the cities of Judah and around about in that neighborhood, and to them which were at Aor, and to them which were at Siphmoth, and to them which were in Ishtemo. All these places were parts of Judah and parts of the tribes of Simeon and all around in there. Some of them were even the tribes of the Levites, which were a tribe that was supposed to be taken care of in the cities of Judah. And it says, and to them that were in Rachel. And of course, this city of Rachel's, it's kind of hard to find. And to them which were in the cities of Jerahmeelitis, and to them which were in the cities of the Kenites. We know who the Kenites were. They were related to Moses' father-in-law. And to them which were at Hormah, and to them which were in Coroshan, and to them which were in Athak, and to them which were in Hebron. Now, Hebron is a town up in the hills and there. And we understand that when David finally gets anointed king for the first time, he is king in Hebron. So all these gifts he's given, I ain't saying they ain't buttering nobody up, but all these gifts he's given to the tribe of Judah and taking care of the tribe of Judah. Now, he is from the tribe of Judah. But when he first gets anointed king, he's anointed king over Judah, not over all of Israel. And so when he's buttering these folks up, he knows it's about time for him to become king. He knows it's about time for Saul to be pushed out of the thing. And so with his gifts, he's getting favor with the people. Then when Saul finally kicks the bucket or whatever, David is set there ready to be anointed king and set over Hebron as his king. And to all places where David himself and his men were wont to haunt. In other words, while they were running from Saul, all these little towns, he made sure everybody got a little present from the spoil that he took from the Amalekites. And that way he covered all of his bases and made sure everybody was content with him. Even those who... He doesn't say he sent some. You remember that city up there that he went and rescued them, and then they says, no, we'll turn him over? He didn't send a gift to them. There's a couple of cities that don't get named here, those that turned again, those guys who was always said, hey, Saul, guess what? He's over here. He didn't send them a gift. But to all the ones that had fed him and clothed him and took care of him and made sure he was okay, all those got gifts from the spoils of the Amalekites. Oh man, we only got a 13-verse chapter next time. We'll never get through that in one night. Okay, next week, back at the ranch, we're going to find out what's happening with the Philistines and with Saul. And that'll definitely have to go into second, because we got to find out what David does to all those guys who took care of Saul. So make sure you come back getting your places for next week's adventures. That's right. Saul and Samuel.